You did get a chance to check out some third, well, I guess everybody else's third party at this event, and you had appointments with Paradox, EA, Activision, and Bethesda. So you want to take us through those companies and games?
Maybe go for Activision, I would say, because
You want to talk about Skylanders?
they had three games there, and was a pretty interesting to talk about, I think. So the first thing we went to was Destiny, and I have to say I was pretty disappointed with what they had to show for Destiny, because I was there today, and all they had to show us was the Vidoc you saw come out like 3 hours ago or something. So I saw it like 5 hours before you. That's what they had to show.
Am I mistaken? Has it been playable? Because was it a video at
Nope.
E3 as well?
No play, not playable. All they did was on the show floor, they basically did exactly the same demo they did at E3. I
Huh?
was pretty bummed out that it didn't have anything more. And the developers were there to take questions, but some people asked like, "Hey, how many players will actually be able to play together?" And the answers were like basically non-answers. They were like, "Oh, in the E3 demo, you could see that you were on a fire team with three players, and then two more fire teams with two with each two players came in the public quest thing." So you can imagine how many players it will be. That's not really a great answer, but okay. At that point, I thought like when I come and try to ask about competitive multiplayer or anything, they're probably going to tell me nothing. So I thought that was a bunch of nothing. So then I basically went on to Call of Duty Ghosts, and at first we were sat down with a community manager to get like an introduction into some of the new multiplayer stuff. It was all about the multiplayer for Call of Duty Ghosts. And she told us about how the new creator class system works, with that you can create your own characters, and how perks are point based, and which new weapons are there, the new weapon class, basically all the stuff that you saw from the multiplayer reveal last week. And then she went on to explain the new multiplayer game modes, Cranked, which is if you get a kill, you have a 30-minute time, 30-second timer to kill another guy, or you are going to explode. And the other mode, I don't remember what it's called, but I thought it was pretty interesting. It's you basically, I would say it's probably the best thing to explain. It's like a variation on capture the flag, I guess. Each team has basically the map is like with two spawn points for each team, and each team has like 1 point to defend in it. And the aim of your team is to get to the enemy team's point. Basically, get into it in any way possible, and that way you score and you get teleported back to your own spawn.
So wait, the point is simply to
It's not
get there?
realistic in any way, shape, or form. Yeah, it's kind of like getting into the end zone in football. It's just getting in that zone, and that's the point. And once you do that, then there's like 10 seconds you can't score again. So that's the time you should probably try to defend, because the other team doesn't really have to care about their own point at that point, in that time. I thought it was an interesting mode, but kind of hard to play without much team coordination, to be honest. The thing for me was playing Call of Duty Ghosts is one thing I noticed was, which I thought was really nice, they talked about that they were reworking how the sound effects work in the game. Like, when you're shooting outside, it sounds different from when you're shooting in a small room and stuff like that. That stuff really sounded nice. I think all the sound effects, and especially the weapon firing, sound really good. I don't think they are quite up there now with DICE, but they're getting there. Because a lot of the complaints for previous Call of Duties was like these weapons sound like pea shooters. And that's probably not what you want in your military game.
I mean, this is a random aside, but I actually had that experience while listening to the Killzone demo at the Sony conference, because it sounded like paintball guns.
Yeah, and that's usually not a good thing, I think, in such a game.
Yeah, it was the first time I really noticed, like, this just sounds weird for a gun.
Yeah.
Like, but, yeah, go on.
And the other thing was, they talked about how much the perks are going to change, how it's going to play, and these modes are going to change how you play. But at the end of the day, after like 5 minutes playing it on the Xbox One, I was like, yeah, this is still Call of Duty. I mean, they have the new engine, but to be honest, it didn't feel much different from like Modern Warfare 3 or any of the other ones. So I kind of went away disappointed after the excitement of the new modes and the new possibilities of the systems they were going to introduce. But what's the point of your cool squad system if the basic gameplay is just pretty much completely unchanged? I didn't think like it changed enough, to be honest. But
you get to try out the dog.
Yeah, at one point I got enough kills that Riley, I could spawn Riley, and Riley was running with me, and basically if anyone got too close, Riley attacked the guy and killed him, or Riley would also like growl if an enemy is close. So basically if you don't have an UAV in the air or something like that, you would still know that an enemy is close by because of dog growling, which is kind of cool.
Now, am I mistaken in this, but wasn't there a dog as a perk in World at War?
That was, and also in Black Ops, but that's like a dog pack. You basically, the whole map would just swarm with dogs and they would kill people. That's the difference. You now just have this one dog. It's basically, Infinity Ward now has one dog, Treyarch has lots of dogs.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how you break it down. But, yeah. And playing it, it was already running at 60 frames a second. Ran really fine, actually. And I think it looked better from what I've seen there than some of the videos have shown, actually. Especially the character models, I think, looked way better in-game. Because it's probably because back when they had the Call of Duty reveal, where they were like doing these ultra close-ups of all the different parts of the models, and then you're like, ugh, some of it doesn't look that great. But in game, it actually does look pretty good, especially because they also now have a lot of optical customization to them. So yeah, if you're still into Call of Duty, it's probably going to be really good for you. If you're fallen off the bandwagon, I don't think it's going to do enough to get you back on.
I guess this is an aside again. Is it enough of a change? Would you recommend like getting a new system for it, or if you were to get it, would you just stick with the current gen versions?
You mean because of the visuals, or because of the...
Yeah, because I mean it is. I mean, as you said, the core game itself hasn't changed much.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think it would be worth getting the system for. No, not at all. Not at all. No.
Okay.
Because you're going to get also 60 frames experience on the other systems. That is always the aim. So and the gameplay feel therefore will pretty much be the same. You will maybe miss out on some eye candy, but probably not that much, to be honest, because it's not the best looking next gen game out there. I thought it looked better from what I've seen so in other places, but it's still not the best looking of a bunch. And the last game Activision had was Skylander Swap Force. Which, first of all, I have to get like a shout out to Lou, who was running the demo for us there, because he probably directed the funniest demo of any game I have seen at Gamescom, and that's actually pretty good to keep you awake, because if you're running around the whole day and then you sit down in these air-conditioned places, you kind of start to get too comfortable, and his fun demeanor actually kept you engaged, so that was pretty good. He's in charge of the whole Skylanders franchise, actually.
So,
really fun guy. They introduced us to the concept of the Swap Force first, which, if you don't know, is the new game will come with two figures that you basically can rip apart in the middle. So you have a top part and a bottom part. They are held together by magnets, by the way, so it's not like they will fall apart all the time. It's actually worked pretty well. I got to try it out myself. I actually got to play it as well and then play with the figures and stuff. So you can rip them apart and combine them in any way you want. So basically, if you have like a guy whose special ability is teleportation, and another guy whose ability it is to what was it? There was this one nature guy who had the possibility to like summon a bunch of homing monkeys. Yeah, they had some pretty weird abilities at times. So you could like combine the top part of Zulu with the bottom part of the guy with teleportation, and then you basically had like a possibility to spawn monkeys that would home in on your enemies, and then in case they were getting too close, you could teleport all over the place so enemies wouldn't be able to hit you, or you could get to places where you normally wouldn't be able to. So yeah, and I also actually talked to him because if you're not aware, all the Skylanders also save your progress with them and the experience on the figurine. So I wanted to know what actually happens when you rip them apart, how the experience is going to be actually recorded in them, because they have two parts now. And he told me that actually they record the progress of the specific figure just at the top part, but that also determines the progress for the bottom part. So if you have, for example, what was he called? I don't remember. He was like a flying guy who was on a jet engine. If you have that guy and you level up to like level 2, you have his level 2 abilities for the top and his level 2 abilities for the bottom. Or let's, better example, let's say he's level 5. So level 5 top, level 5 bottom. But if you now combine his bottom part with the part from another top from another Skylander, this new figure you created would have the level from the top part, but still the better abilities from the bottom part. So you could basically use a lower level top part with a higher level lower part. Although when you play with this figurine, the lower part would no longer level up, just the top part. Was it too confusing, or did it make sense?
It made sense. It's basically that the top determines the property level of the base characters, and then the bottom part is just kind of enhanced. How does it work with older toys?
Yeah, they all still work. The only thing they had to do, because they now have a completely new engine and Vicarious Visions is working on this one, is they had to basically redo all the character models and basically also give all of them a new ability, because now you can actually jump, which you couldn't do in the previous games. So he told me it was a lot of work to actually get all those characters ready for this game. So yeah, you can take all your old toys, level them up to the new max level. I forgot to ask what the new max level is. I think it's 5 levels higher than in Giants, but I'm not quite sure. And the only thing is, I mean, they still want to sell choices. It was the same if you took, like, Skylander 1 toys to Giants. In Giants, every Skylander got a second ability. The Skylanders from the first game couldn't get the second ability, but they could still level up. And the same case will be with this new game. Characters will be able to get some kind of special ability. Didn't really ask to specify what it was. It's not important. There will be new abilities that only Skylanders from Series 3 basically can get, but you can still use all your old toys and level them up to higher levels. So that's totally fine. And you can, it's not important that you get a new ability. It's still a fun game to play. It's not really that big of a deal, to be honest.
Against an addiction.
Yeah. And like I said, I also got to play it. And I have to say, it was really fun to play. I mean, it has a real quirky sense of humor, like I said, with homing monkey attacks and pretty crazy character design stuff that kind of appealed to me. And basic gameplay is like a very, let's say, a simple action RPG with you fighting lots of enemies, solving some basic puzzles, leveling up, choosing your abilities, getting some basic equipment in the form of hats, because everyone loves hats these days because of Valve. Yeah, what I thought was interesting also, that in the previous games they had like, that you could only, basically that they have parts in the game world that you could only access with,
certain
Skylander, which had a certain, which was associated with a certain element. So, for example, it was maybe, but those were always optional parts of the world, because you can play through the whole game with just the starter characters you get. It's just that there are maybe optional parts in the game where you might need someone with a certain element. And this time around, there are also parts where you might need a special ability, which the Swap Force might have. And those are not just different levels, but they are more like challenges. So one thing they have shown is was like you needed a character which had the speed ability, basically. And he used like the bottom of a tech character who had like a wheel instead of legs. His ability was basically speed at that point. So he created this character, got into this special level, and I thought it was really funny. What it reminded me of was like, do you remember from the Sega Genesis Sonic games, these tube bonus levels where you had to select the rings and stuff? It was kind of like that, but you had like a turbo button to basically speed up because it was on a time limit, and then there were obstacles coming to you, and you had to collect coins, which you can use to buy different stuff. So they now have all kinds of different challenge levels that they also work in, and I think you can also replay to get basically better at them and stuff like that. So that's another new addition to Skylanders. Besides just the Swap Force. Where I also asked him, because there are still core characters, they're calling them, that don't have the swap ability, so you can't take them apart. They're also still creating new ones. But you, if you think like the swap thing is totally cool and you just want to use swap characters, you can totally play through the whole game just with Swap Force character and don't have to use any core characters if you don't want to. Or the other way around is not possible, because there will be like gates where you have to combine two different elements and stuff. But that's why they give you two Swap Force characters in the starter kit. You will get two Swap Force characters, the portal thing, and one core character. So yeah, I thought it was really fun with the humor, and the characters are actually, a lot of them are kind of cute and funny and have like fun abilities and stuff. So yeah, now you can make fun of me.
I will. We will not today's more for professional opinions and all that other stuff. I mean, Skylanders is a fun game. I have friends who are parents and stuff. I really feel bad for them between Skylanders, Disney Infinity, and now Pokemon Rumble U. It's not even out of use, just toys ain't about the house.
Yeah, personally, I had so much fun with it that I'm actually thinking about picking it up at PlayStation 4 launch right now. I might actually pick it up. I think it's a really fun game. But for me, it wouldn't be like this. I would not try to collect all the toys. I would probably just get enough toys that I can get into all the areas in the game, and that's it. So I would probably need like 8 figures, I think, or 6. Because the swap characters can swap stuff. And I would probably need less. I'm not sure. At launch will also be, I think, 16 of those Swap Force characters to buy. So, with a possibility of 256 combinations. Crazy. Crazy, I think. So, lots of stuff to experiment with. I asked them about if they would do maybe online co-op this time around. Still no, because they think this is totally like a couch co-op experience, which I can understand.
Yes,
it makes total sense.
The other thing is, I mean, it's also part platform, and we haven't seen many online platformers.
Yeah, that's true. And it makes sense because of toy aspect. You together with someone can throw different toys onto it together and stuff like that. And if you have the Swap Force characters, maybe you and a friend play together, and he brings his toy, and maybe the other guy has never seen it, then they can play with both, and then after a while say like, hey, let's swap the tops from each other and play that way and stuff like that. So it makes total sense.
The other cynical side is, of course, is that you kind of use that on your, like, if I can play and I get half the toys and you can play and you get the other half of the toys and we can beat the whole game by just using that instead of everybody having to get all the toys.
Yeah, it's actually a nice thing if you have, like, a friend who's also into it. You don't have that, toys.
Well, I guess what I meant was, like, if you do it online, you can just kind of cheat the system. Like,
oh, yeah.
You get ice, I get fire, somebody else gets, you know, like, ground, or I don't know the elements in this game, but I'm assuming
there are, like, 8 now. I think there's ice, fire, water. No, there's also death as an element. Whatever.
but you know, you get the point. It's like, you get 8 people, each one gets an element. This way, you can all beat the game without having to buy 8 different toys.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's the cynical side of me. But,
yeah,
yes,
but I don't know if you even really need the 8. Like I said, both are optional areas, and from what I understand, it's just you really have to be a completionist if you really want to see all of these extra areas, because most of them just do a couple of things and get more coins. It's not really that big of a stuff. I guess for kids it's probably cool, because it extends the time you spend with the game way longer, which is probably actually good for parents. I mean, it's better than buy like 5 games. The toys are not that expensive, I think, as buying 5 games. The 8 toys probably not come out as that expensive. So yeah, buy the Skylanders.
Okay.
And I got my own Skylander.
You got 2 Skylanders, actually.
No, one.
I thought you gave away one.
No, I just got for one. I kept the one. Gave all the other swag I gave away. I got like a t-shirt and some other stuff. All that stuff I gave to a little girl I saw on the train with a Skylanders t-shirt, and I thought like, oh, she will probably enjoy all this stuff. I don't need it anyway.
Yeah. I wish I had your thought process, because I have a lot of gaming swag from various conventions I never use.
I only kept the 2 things I tweeted about. I kept the Skylander, which is this bronze hot dog, was also given out at E3, and apparently it's pretty rare. So I thought, I just keep it. I mean, it's for Skylanders Giants, but when I get the other game, I can still use them. So, whatever. Oh, I have already a Fire Element character. The other stuff, the other thing I kept was, when I saw Witcher 3, they had like this huge bag on every place. And I was like, wait, this thing is heavy. What did they put in there? And when I looked into it, it was like, A 1,500 piece Witcher 3 puzzle. Jigsaw puzzle. Why? I don't know.
Have
I don't
fun
know.
With that.
Because the first thing when you think of a Witcher is jigsaw puzzles.
it's marketing. I don't know half of how it makes sense, but we'll get to the Witcher 3 later on.
I kept it because it's weird.
and then it works.
Yeah.
Then it works. But you also checked out EA, and they did have playable games, and I believe you checked out Titanfall?
Yes. That was the first game of, I played two Paradox games the day before, but on the press day, it was the first game I actually played. Went straight to EA, straight to Titanfall, and they had the PC version running, actually. But you were able to play with a pad if you wanted to, but they also had a mouse and keyboard. Being in Germany, where PC gaming is still kind of huge, everyone played with a mouse and keyboard. And I have to say, Titanfall is kind of amazing. The gameplay, I mean, the basic shooting. I mean, if you're familiar with Call of Duty, those guys, the Respawn guys, all ex-Call of Duty guys, well, a lot of them, actually. Not most of them, but a lot of them. Ex-Call of Duty guys who worked at the Infinity Ward. So the basic shooting and moving feels a lot like Call of Duty. But because they added the jetpack, it opens up the game so much, you basically have a double jump. And as soon as you double jump, you can then hold your jump button, and if you're close to a wall, you will immediately start wall running on it. And the map we played was like this small town which had very narrow streets. So the possibility was to double jump on one side and then run along on one side of the building, jump to completely to the other side of the road, run along the road, and you can basically run in a circle, never touching the ground, which is pretty cool. And or if you want to, you use it to get on top of buildings and then try to orchestrate ambushes that way, which is also pretty nice. There come in the classes. They had three classes for us to play. The first class was the Assault class. I didn't play that one because that class was kind of uninteresting. It didn't have any really special powers, had a normal Assault rifle. It was a sci-fi Assault rifle, but whatever. It was a Assault rifle. Normal pistol, stuff like that. It's your bread and butter stuff. What was more interesting was the Tactician. The Tactician had a pistol which had like an extra HUD element. It was like you had this rectangle on your screen, and every enemy that was in this rectangle would then have like, it was I think a 2 second or 3 second lock on, and then your pistol would basically lock onto the heads of multiple enemies. So what I did was run along the walls, get on top of a building. And because in the first round, people were not very good at doing that. I tried the immunity, it worked fine. So I was on top of a building near the spawn point, and basically did some spawn camping. I mean, it's lame, but it was kind of fun. I was at the top of them, looking down, just, they were like fighting with other guys, and I was sitting there, waiting for the lock-on to happen, and then you just pull the trigger and pull off like three headshots at once. It's a great feeling, actually. Really fun weapon. But it's not in balance, I think. It works out because of the lock-on and stuff like that. And the other weapon that the Tactician had was like a sticky grenade launcher, which was pretty good pretty good against these ground troops, which we call pilots. Everyone is a pilot. And really good against titans. You could basically use them basically as mines as well. So you could could cut off the streets for Titans. The first class was the CQB class. And the CQB class had the primary weapon was a shotgun, which and that class was probably my favorite class, because a shotgun doesn't seem to sound quite too effective against Titans and pilots in a sci-fi setting. But because of the mobility, I was able to run along walls, jump into, double jump into windows, so you could get behind people who were trying to snipe people out of windows, of other windows on other sides. You basically just jump in, hand out two shotgun shots, take out two guys, jump out, run along another wall, get on, and then maybe jump on top of a Titan. Another thing you can do is basically jump on top of enemy Titans, and then if no one shoots you down, you can basically just shoot into the enemy cockpit and then take out the pilot that way. Kind of fun.
You haven't gotten to the good parts yet. I want to know about the mechas, the Titans.
I'm coming to them. No, I explained to you the pilot classes. I come to, they actually have Titan classes.
So, are you certain people can ride the mechas?
Well, the Titans are actually work in two ways. You can get Titans two ways. They don't want to be like kill streaks in Call of Duty that you play for like the whole match and you never get to get into Titan because you didn't get enough points. That's something they don't want. So they have the Titans on a timer right now of 2 minutes. I say right now because they are. I talked with what was she called? She was also on the Giant Bomb stream. I think her name is Abby. She's on the development team. She worked at G4 before. Anyway, I talked with her. That's right now the time frame. They're experimenting all the time on how they're going to balance that stuff. But right now, 2 minute timer. After the 2 minutes, a voice will tell you, your Titan is ready to be called in. And then all you have to do is, on the PC version, it was aiming somewhere and hitting V. Then, shortly after that, your Titan would come down from the air. Be for some time, the Titan would be under basically a shield bubble, so no one would be able to attack that freshly called on Titan or get into the freshly called on Titan except you. So, and one thing I wanted to try out immediately was like, because in the trailers you see like people sliding into the under a Titan and then getting in, or jumping on top of a Titan getting in. So that's the first thing I want to try out. And it really works if they see in the trailer. You basically just get close to your Titan in any way possible and held down the E key. I think it would probably be the X button on the gamepad. And as long as you do that, no matter from where you get to the Titan will basically then grab you, put you in him, or you will into the ground from the top. It doesn't really matter. You would just get in really quick. And then you would have different abilities depending on the Titan class you picked. So we had three in this demo I played. The first was the Titan with a light machine gun. But since it's a Titan, it's kind of a huge light machine gun. So it's really, really effective against other pilots that are running around. So if you have that Titan, you're just mowing them down. And the difference is you lose some of the mobility compared to the pilots, of course. You can no longer jump. Instead of jumping, you have like a dash move you can use to move out of the way of things. And the light Titan also has the ability to create a force field to in which he could like crack bullets shot at him or rockets and fire back at whoever was doing that. Only problem was you couldn't do hold this force field open for too long. otherwise would break down. You would still get hit by all the stuff you were trying to collect. The other thing was they could create, I'm not sure if they could create the EMP field. I think the other thing they could create was the just smoke screen. So basically, people wouldn't be able to see them, and you could like approach through through that, or maybe get away. The other one was a Titan with a heavy machine gun, basically the same as the light machine gun, just with more damage output, which would be able to be more effective against other Titans. And the third Titan was one which had a rocket launcher. It had like a big-ass rocket launcher, which even if you shot once, it would shoot like three rockets who were circling around themselves. And that's basically the Titan, which is anti-Titan, basically. And he had like two special abilities. One special ability was he didn't just have this one rocket launcher, he also had a rocket launcher on his shoulder. So once you were reloading the rocket launcher you had in your hands, you were able to still use the special ability rocket launcher on your shoulder, which is pretty fun. And he was also able to create a force field, an EMP field around him, because what the CQB pilot had was not only a shotgun, but he also had the big-ass anti-Titan rocket launcher. And just two shots of out of that gun, rocket launcher, would be able to take down a Titan. So, but the rocket launcher had to do a lock-on, and as soon as you would get, like, this lock-on sound, you could then fire off your EMP to prevent him to shoot you. And, the whole dynamic between the pilot being this fast and totally agile thing running around all over the place, and the Titans being kind of bulky and heavier, worked out really well, I thought. Although, like I said, Abby told me they're not quite finished with balancing, but they're pretty happy with where this game is right now. And the dynamic works really well, I have to say. And it's totally fun to play and see, like, people when they're doing well, when they have a lot of points, they can call Titans more often. So my first game, where I ended up being first, I think I called, like, six Titans down my game, which is really cool.
Is there a limit to how many Titans can be on the battlefield at once?
No.
Okay.
Didn't seem that way. So, I guess it can be like total Titan chaos if players are playing well enough. But like I said, they can be taken down pretty easily with rocket launchers and stuff. They are not this invulnerable thing. They can be if you play it well enough, or if other pilots actually back you up, basically prevent the guys with rocket launchers to take you down, then the Titans can be pretty powerful. But if those guys don't take care of you, people can get on buildings behind you and take you down. It's not that hard. Or jump on top of you, like I told you. So the other interesting thing was we actually got to play one of those campaign multiplayer matches. So my team had like a prisoner of war who was pretty important. He got like this sweet introduction of, yeah, we have this guy and the others don't have to get him for whatever reason. I don't quite remember. And the other team, if you played their side, they would have interaction. Yeah, we have to get our guy out of there, he's pretty important, stuff like that. And the really interesting thing was, I think we were playing 8 versus 8, but there were also AI guys on every team walking around, which I didn't know before that was also the case. So, that has two functions. The first function is, if you're new to the game, and the mission starts, the first thing that will happen, the AI guys will immediately run towards the points that are important. So even if you don't know what you're doing, just follow the AI guys, you will get to the action and to the points that are important. That's pretty good, I think.
That is a good thing.
Yeah. So that's pretty clever, I thought. The other thing is, even if you're not a very good player, the AI guys are not, they're pretty good, but not that good. So you can easily get kills from the AI guys, but those will just not give you as many points as killing real players. So that makes it possible even for not more casual players, for example, to get more kills from AI players and that way call down Titans faster or gain more level ups, stuff like that. I think that's a pretty cool solution. But the even better part is, depending on how the match turns out, I was two times on the winning team on the defending side. So we defended. Our aim was to basically kill enough of the other team so they would abort the mission, because it was like not worth it to lose that many people to just get that one guy out. That was the story thing behind it.
Oh,
and
nice.
At that point, we had won the match. The match is basically over. But then the epilogue starts, basically, of the mission. That's what they're calling it, epilogue. And at that point, the team that was attacking has to flee from the battlefield. A timer starts, and when the timer ends, at a point on the level, basically, there will arrive like some kind of dropship, hover over a building, and all of them will have to get on top of a building and jump into the dropship to just get the hell out of there, so not many more people have to die. If they accomplish that with enough people, they basically win the epilogue, and even though they are the losing team, they still get bonus points and bonus experience.
Oh, that's nice.
If they're not even able to do that, the winning team gets an extra bonus. So it's a nice way to basically, even if you're on a losing team, still give you another chance to get some more experience out of the whole match, and don't make it this lopsided thing like a Call of Duty match sometimes can be. If you get totally destroyed in a match, you're not going to get much out of it, but the way that this epilogue works, you might still get some nice stuff out of the whole match, even though you lost the main thing. And that I thought was also a really cool idea, in my opinion. What else do we want to know?
I think that was pretty thorough.
Yeah. Okay.
I think they confirmed this at E3, but you can't extill other people's titans, right?
No, it doesn't seem that way.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand why, because if like one team makes jacks the entire other team's titans and get their own, it's kind of a one-sided affair.
Because at one time when I died, I saw one of my team jumping on top of an empty titan because the shield went down, and he jumped on top of an empty titan. He wasn't stealing it. He was just firing into his cockpit and destroying it that way. So that basically confirmed for me that you can probably steal other team's titans.
Okay.
So, moving on with EA. The next thing I saw was actually Battlefield 4. So, the first thing, I actually saw two different demos of Battlefield 4. The first one was the Behind Closed Doors one. That was an 8v8 match on a smaller map with just free control points that you had to get, and basically tickets going down and no vehicles. It was an infantry only thing, but that was actually running on PlayStation 4. Well, not actually running on PlayStation 4, on PlayStation 4 dev kits, but it's the same deal. So that was actually my first experience with a PlayStation 4 gamepad. Not at the Sony booth, but at the Battlefield 4 thing. And that's when they told us about the game will be running at 60 frames per second, would basically just look as a PC version, and I basically played this match of Battlefield, and it was pretty fun. I mean, Battlefield is not the game you most of the time want to play in 8v8. Battlefield is more like the game you want to play in the big matches, but I still had a lot of fun with it. Then at the end of that, they gave me a fast pass, which enabled me to get quickly into the demo at the on the main show floor, and there they had set up a 32 versus 32 player match that was running on PCs though, but the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 version will this time also have 64 player matches. Which is pretty cool, because Battlefield 3 does not have that on current-gen consoles, and the current-gen version of Battlefield 4 will also not feature 64-player matches, because it's too much player for the amount of RAM that these consoles have. Yeah. And I have to say, the 64-player match, then, that's the Battlefield experience you want to have. That was amazing, I have to say. It was really cool how there were all kinds of shit going on. We were playing like, I was on the Chinese team playing against the Russians, fighting over the Sichuan Islands, I think. What's the name of it? And the interesting part of it, they specifically picked this map to show off that they now have naval warfare back in, because it was in Battlefield 2, but not in Battlefield 3. So you basically had all these small islands, which then you got connected through with boats or through helicopters. That was a pretty cool dynamic. Then you had like, I think there were like five control points, and then you had like fights on each of these small islands, and then like, okay, now we have to somehow get onto the other island. I mean, I can swim over there, but that's not that great. So let's take the sweet ass speedboats, with some of them like machine guns, others had like rocket grenade launchers on them, and then there were like sea fights going on between the islands when people were trying to cross over that way. Or sometimes people would just try, oh no, our boat is coming, I'll just jump into the water and try to survive that way. Our people were like trying to hover around with a helicopter around islands to basically secure them. The only thing that bothered me, I couldn't figure out how to actually use a parachute on the PC version. So, when I tried to jump out of a helicopter, it usually ended badly. but still fun to play. And there was also, which was cool, they had like an air carrier also in the vicinity. So, that air carrier also had like weapons on it, I think there was a helicopter on it, and at some point that helicarrier got destroyed, and there was like this destroyed helicarrier with a domination point on it, and then you had to move somehow swim to the wreckage of this carrier and move between all the destroyed jets that were on it and stuff. So that was a really fun experience, especially because we also had the commander mode back in, and we actually each team had a commander. I'm not sure on which, I think they played on the PC, but you can also play the commander just from like an iPad, for example. So even if you are not on your PC or on your console, you can join games play the commander mode from your iPad, for example. And the commander can basically then give like orders to different squads, tell them which points they should take, or the commander can call in airstrikes, support packages, stuff like that. And that worked out pretty well. I saw the commander giving out, like, to my squad specific orders to points close by, or I noticed that before we went to a point, he called down airstrike to thin down the defense of that point, so we had an easier time going in, stuff like that. The 64 player games are just really good in this game. So if you would ask me for this game, if it would be worth getting the next gen version compared to Call of Duty, then I would say absolutely, just because of the 64 player match gaming thing and the commander's mode, because for Battlefield I think that makes a really big difference.
I think in any game that would make a huge difference.
Yeah. And the map also was really big. I mean, it had small islands, but because there were so many, it was really big and really fun to play on. The third game at EA that I played was Need for Speed Rivals.
I had
some trouble getting in the behind the closed doors demo, but luckily EA always has this open bar in their thing, and at the open bar there also was a demo station for Need for Speed Rivals, so I thought, like, whatever, I'm not going to try to get into the other demo thing, because they were like, I felt like they were shitting me with the points, whatever. I'm not going to complain here on the podcast about that. Anyway, they had this demo station there at the open bar, and I got to play Need for Speed Rivals from the cop's perspective. So the first thing I noticed was it's not being this year, it's not done by Criterion, but it's done by this new studio. You probably should look it up. I don't remember the name right now. I think they are a French studio, but it's pretty new. And
Ghost Games.
Yeah, Ghost Games, exactly. But I think they are supported by Criterion in creating this game. I think that was the word they chose. And the first thing I noticed playing it, the driving, actually, the physics of it, felt a lot like Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, the Criterion version, from, like, what was it, 2 years ago?
Which one?
Need for Speed Hot Pursuit.
I don't even keep track of them anymore. I know, no, Hot Pursuit was, yes, yeah, no, that was Most Wanted.
That was Most Wanted. Then it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, because 2 years ago was The Run.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, then 3 years ago. Although Hot Pursuit, Most Wanted also kind of, the physics also felt pretty much like Most Wanted. I'm just talking about Most Wanted because I played the cop, and the cops were a pretty big deal in Hot Pursuit, of course. It was basically the whole setup of the game, having the cops versus the street races. And the thing is, they scaled down the abilities you have as a cop. Because I still remember there were, like, you had the spike traps in Hot Pursuit, you had, like, EMP, you had the helicopter, and I think it was something else, if I remember correctly. And the abilities they gave me in this demo was, I was playing against AI. Basically, I was driving just around the open world, and then at some point it was like, hey, there's this guy who was, like, way over the speed limit at this traffic light, and then basically what I had to do was catch up to him. And then then my sirens would go off, and if he was in this, there was, like, on the radar, like, a circle around me, and if that guy was in the circle, then the pursuit would start. And they would be able to use, the first ability I had was an EMP charge. Then I would have to, like, keep him in sight, and then if the EMP would go off, the brakes of the guy would just start and he would spin out, but it would give me an opportunity to just ram into him, because my aim is to basically do enough damage to actually stop the other car. And the other ability they gave me was the spike trap. So if they get in front, I could use the spike trap, slow them down, and then maybe try to do enough damage to catch them. And then basically what I would do is like try to get as many people as possible to level up and get extra experience and stuff like that. Saying that, I thought it was pretty fun game. I don't think it's from the demo I played, I don't think I got the part that was special, because from the E3 stuff, I remember they're doing the whole thing of you playing alone, but you're also playing online, and people will come in randomly into your game, into your campaign, stuff like that. You're basically playing an online game even when you're playing the campaign. That's something that they did not experience. I guess that will probably make the biggest difference. But the driving felt nice. Like I said, it felt like the Criterion games, which is, in my opinion, a very good thing. And they, of course, are now using Frostbite, the DICE engine, which is also used for Battlefield 4. Basically, EA is using Frostbite for everything but their sports games. And that's why I thought the game had a really nice look to it. There was, like, dirt on the windows, or like really nice details. The car could scratch up real nicely and stuff like that. I also thought like from Frostbite it profited when it came to environments, like where these real nice woodlands to the sides, and it all felt pretty natural and big and like real world. It felt more natural than usually driving games feel, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah, and that was EA for me.
Okay. We are actually going to cut it short right now. We still have Bethesda and I think a couple of others and games, but we are going at an hour and a half. I'm going to cut this up anyhow. But I do appreciate your impressions, and we'll have this up throughout the weekend. So come back as we'll have more from The Witcher 3. And what is it?
Hotline Miami.
Hotline Miami 2 and so much more. So thanks again, Martin.
No problem.